The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Hello and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. This is Richard Palmer standing in for your regular host, Mr. Stephen Fleury, who is on his way back to the UK. He should arrive very shortly, so I'm sure he'll be back with you on this show before too long. Well, today I want to talk about economics. Right, now that most of our listeners have gone, no, I'm just kidding. We've got some important, very interesting economic news to discuss today that you will want to stick around for. We're going to talk about Britain misplacing half a trillion pounds down the back of someone's sofa somewhere. America, the dollar in danger, basically America's very survival at stake. We'll talk a little bit about gold, perhaps. So some big, important subjects here today. And joking aside, these are ones that people are really interested in. Economics articles are often some of the most read at thetrumpet.com, so you'll want to stick around for this. And we'll start with Britain's missing half a trillion pounds. That's got to be getting up, well, probably somewhere around $600 billion, $700 billion, somewhere around there. So just a vast amount of money. Here's an outline of the situation from an interview on LBC Radio.
Suddenly we've discovered that UK is a little bit poorer, just a little bit poorer
just
than we...
Just a little bit.
How much are we talking about?
I mean, you know those feelings when you wake up and you feel a bit flush, yeah. You go to the bank point and you put your card in to check your bank account and, oh dear, actually you're overdrawn.
Yeah, yeah. So, or you're 100 quid under
just
when the statement comes in.
Yeah.
You think, oh, it's a shame I'm 100 quid down.
There you go. Yeah. So the UK have woken up to the same thing, but slightly different. It's half a trillion pounds. So what's happened is
so
that... That's 490. It's basically 490 billion pounds.
Okay.
They thought they were in 469 billion pound worth of surplus, but actually we have a 22 billion pound deficit. That equates to a quarter of the value of the UK market in total, the value of our economy.
Well, we just missed it.
So, well, the
Where
reason
is this in the FT?
I haven't seen it.
And this is in, I think it's the Guardian.
And the Guardian.
So the reason behind this is that foreign direct investment by companies has fallen.
Right.
And also our reserve of foreign assets is much lower than we thought as well. So, you know, the accountants have been busy. The Office of National Statistics have redone the numbers, and actually it's much lower than we thought. Now, the reason why this has been offset is two things. First of all, foreign direct investing was slightly supported by existing commitments, so it hasn't really fallen down until recently. And secondly, people have been buying a lot of sterling because they thought that the pound was going to rise. But again, that's quite fickle. Now, the reason this is important is it removes our safety net and also puts us in a weaker position when we're going into Brexit talks. This is not a little tiny rounding up figure.
How is something like this typically rectified? What does a government do when they find an issue like this?
Well, the problem is that, you know, the numbers don't lie and they need to suddenly try and find some, you know, help balance their books. So it just puts them in a much weaker position.
So Britain just managed to replace about a quarter of the entire economic output of our economy. That's a pretty big oops. Now, the figure in question is Britain's net international investment position. It's basically a measure of how many foreign assets British residents own. So it's the amount of foreign assets that British residents own and then minus the amount of British residents or British assets that foreign residents own. So it used to be that the government and the statistic body thought that British residents owned about half a trillion pounds more in foreign assets than foreign residents owned in the UK. Now, though, they found it's the other way around. It's actually that foreign residents own more assets in the UK than British people do abroad. Here's a description of the situation from Ambrose Evans-Pritchard in The Telegraph a few days ago. He wrote that global banks and international bond strategists have been left stunned by revised ONS, that's the Office of National Statistics, revised ONS figures showing that Britain is £490 billion poorer than had been assumed and no longer has any reserve of net foreign assets, depriving the country of its safety margin as Brexit talks reach a crucial juncture. A massive write-down in the UK's balance of payment data shows that Britain's stock of wealth, the international investment position, has collapsed. And he talks about some of that. Those figures we've talked about, the transformation, or this transforms the outlook for sterling and the gilt markets, he writes. He quotes Mark Capelton, a UK rate strategist at the Bank of America, saying half a trillion pounds has gone missing. He continues, making matters worse, foreign direct investment by companies is plummeting. It fell from a $120 billion surplus in the first half of 2016 to a $25 billion or billion pound deficit over the same period of this year. So there's far fewer outside companies investing in the UK. He goes on to write, Bank of America says the data revisions make Britain more vulnerable. More vulnerable as it tries to cover a current account deficit stuck at 4.6% of GDP, called its sterling Achilles heel. So what that current account deficit means is that Britain is buying much more from abroad every year, importing much more from abroad than we're exporting. So we're addicted to buying lots and lots of foreign goods, but we don't make anywhere near as many goods ourselves that we can sell abroad. And Ambrose Evan Pritchard writes, the country requires constant flows of imported capital to cover excess consumption. So again, because we're spending so much, we've got to keep bringing in money from outside the UK to fuel that spending. He writes that talks about that revision from the Office of National Statistics, and he writes that that stems from the discovery that Britons own fewer shares than previously thought, and foreigners own more British assets. Mark Carney, he continues, the governor of the Bank of England, warns that Britain is overly reliant on the kindness of strangers. The kindness of strangers to plug the current account gap. So basically, yeah, we talked about that situation. Britain is bringing in, importing far more than it's exporting. America is in the same boat. I think Britain's situation as a percentage of its economy is much worse. And that's leading to a weaker pound. And as Ambrose Evans Pritchard talks about in this, the current revelations and the way things are going for the British economy, it could lead to a dramatically weaker pound. Now, if you're living in the UK, you're already aware that the pound is much weaker than it was, say, about a year and a half ago. If Britain is buying more from abroad than it's selling, it makes the pound weaker. It means we're having to sell lots of pounds so that we can buy all those other goods from the rest of the world in foreign currencies. And if you're selling a lot of something, it pushes the price down. It makes the pound worth less. And that has very real consequences for the wealth of everybody in Britain. If your pound is worth less, then you know, your income is worth less, your savings are worth less, it pushes up inflation. Here's an example of just one of the consequences that we're seeing in Britain with the weaker pound.
Now, more than 2,500 products have reduced in size over the last 5 years, but we're still paying the same price for them. New findings show that chocolate bars, toilet rolls and coffee are just some of the items to have been affected by the phenomenon dubbed shrinkflation. Some companies are blaming the rising costs of ingredients and materials for the trend. Our correspondent Sophie Long has been finding out more.
Andrex has always prided itself on being
soft, strong and unbeatably long.
But now we hear it's getting shorter.
So spend your pennies wisely.
Love these.
And Maltesers,
187 calories of naughtiness actually,
will have even fewer calories because you won't find as many of them in the bag.
Thank you. Back in the olden days when I was spending my pocket money on pick and mix, 50 pence certainly went a lot further. Thank you. Nowadays, though, some companies are choosing not to raise their prices, but to make things smaller, which means they go more quickly. Can I have some more cola bottles, please?
And it's something analysts say we're going to have to get used to.
It's a hidden inflation, shrinkflation, because consumers are
I suppose, less likely to notice a smaller package than they are to notice, of course, higher prices in the shops. And that makes it easier, if you like, it's the less of two evils for producers who are looking to manage the higher costs of imported prices due to the pound's fall.
Manufacturers say their products are just as good, and they're just trying to keep them affordable. Sophie Long, BBC News.
So that was a report from the News at Six on the BBC that was from July just this summer. So you're seeing a rise in prices, and you're seeing this phenomenon across the board. You're seeing it in the US as well, as there are very similar trends and pressures going on over there, where prices are going up, businesses are having to pay more to produce things because the pound is worth less, and the way they're getting around that is by shrinking packaging, putting less or fewer crisps, making smaller cartons of juice and selling it for exactly the same price. It's a form of inflation, as you heard there, shrinkflation. And the latest figures suggest that this could be about to get much, much worse. At the moment, the EU is kind of accidentally bailing out Britain. The European Central Bank is doing its quantitative easing. It's basically, you know, printing money, and then that money, all that extra money that it's printing, a lot of that is finding its way into British government debt. And so it's helping to prop up the British economy. But the ECB is meant to cut that back towards the end of, well, towards the end of this year and stop it completely by the end of 2018. And that could have big consequences for Britain. It could mean that there's no longer people willing to lend the government money, and Britain's government is still in a huge amount of debt. I did an article a few years ago. It's one of those situations that just gets really irritating, where everyone talks, you go and you ask the average man on the street, and they think that Britain's government is bringing in more money than it is spending, because everybody talks about deficit reduction. We're reducing the deficit. We're reducing the deficit. And so it sounds like reducing the deficit, it sounds like Britain isn't borrowing as much money, or isn't borrowing money anymore. We're cutting the deficit. All that means, the deficit is just how much more Britain is borrowing than it was borrowing the year before. So Britain is still borrowing massive amounts every year. It's just, in many cases, not borrowing quite as much as it had been the year before. But all of Britain's politicians, they all talk as though Britain is not borrowing money. You go and you ask people on the streets. They did a survey. I think the results of the survey found that more people believe that Elvis Presley is still alive than understand the true situation of Britain's debt. People just don't understand how much we're borrowing each year. So Britain is still borrowing. A lot of our ability to borrow that each year comes because the European Central Bank is printing money. The Bank of England has also been quantitative easing and printing money as well. Essentially printing money, a little more complicated than that, but generally propping up the British economy. And that's going to stop soon. Ambrose Evans-Pritchard quoted from David Owen, who works for Jefferies, saying, "You can very easily construct a scenario where this goes pear-shaped for Britain. You could have a gilt strike." Gilts is Britain government debt. So a gilt strike would be people stopping to buy British government debt. "The risk for a small open economy like ours is that the Bank of England may ultimately have to raise rates to defend sterling. We've been here before when Britain had to go to the IMF in 1976. That was a very humiliating moment for Britain, where we had to get a bailout from the International Monetary Fund." So Ambrose Evans-Pritchard goes on to talk about the potential for a broken pound, a pound that's worth 90 euro cents, worth less than the euro, a pound worth about the same as the dollar. It should be great if you want to travel to the UK from America, but it's not so great for those of us living here. But he talks about how that could be mutually assured destruction for both the UK and the EU. The UK would lose out because we'd have this weak pound and not be able to buy much. The Eurozone would lose out because a weak pound would make all of their goods very expensive to sell to the UK. And that would make, you know, they would lose out on a lot of custom, a lot of people, a lot of sales, which would be very bad for their economy. So we could be looking for a bad situation there, resulting from Britain's economic situation and that situation being a lot worse than originally thought, with that missing half a trillion pounds. Ambrose Evans Pritchard continues to, he quotes more from this, the Bank of America's Capitol, saying that the UK is left facing a triple deficit problem. The household saving rate is close to a half century low at 5.9%. There's not enough internal funding in the UK to soak up the budget deficit, which could reach 4 to 4.5% of GDP. Next year, if pessimists ABN AMRO and Nataxis are right, Ambrose Evans Pritchard continued. A weak pound has made no dent on the trade deficit. So even though our pound has got weaker and it's more expensive to buy things from abroad, we're keeping on buying lots of goods from abroad. And that implies that even if the pound gets weaker, we'll keep on spending goods from abroad. He writes that the awful discovery that Britain's half a trillion pound reserve does not in fact exist could bring matters to a head swiftly and brutally. Swiftly and brutally. So Britain is in a very tough position. And it's not a situation that Britain is well prepared for. The BBC also had an article this week, and it was called Young and in the Red, Personal Debt in Five Charts. Now, much as I'd like to, obviously I can't hold up those charts for you to see. But I can tell you what they're about, if my pages don't stick together too much. So the BBC, they write that borrowing on loans, overdrafts, credit cards and car finances has accelerated since 2011. Although it peaked in November last year, the annual rate of growth of so-called consumer credit remains close to double-digit levels. And they have a chart there showing, you know, at the start of the economic crisis back in 2008, there was a very high amount of debt growing each year. The rate that people were adding to consumer debt, the amount that consumers were borrowing, was very high. It fell after that crisis. And then it reached a new peak in November last year, far higher than it was in 2008. Now, we've come down from that peak slightly, but we're still borrowing, or borrowing is still growing much faster than it was back in the 2008 financial crisis. So we're borrowing even more than we, or even more quickly than we were back then. And they go on to talk about, on this BBC article, that one reason for this is just an explosion of people borrowing money to buy cars. In 2008, there was about 5 billion worth of people borrowing money to spend on cars. Now it's more like 20 billion. So a big uptick in people in car debt, for example, and that's just one type of a whole load of other types of consumer debt that's on the increase. The BBC also writes that the young are more likely to buy essentials on credit. And they continue, all this has left some young people with serious concerns that they will struggle to pay off debts. Some campaigners say that the availability of credit alongside a squeeze in wages has led these young adults to turn more readily than the older generation to credit to buy day-to-day essentials. One in five 25 to 34-year-olds admitted doing this in the past 6 months, according to research by PricewaterhouseCoopers, compared to 6% of the over-25s. So one in five young people are having to borrow money just to buy essentials, just to get food, just to go by. And so Britain could well be facing some serious economic problems soon. But what about the US? There's also the potential of some serious economic problems in the United States as well. Barry Eichengreen is a professor of economics at the University of California, Berkeley. And he had an article in Project Syndicate and another one in Market Watch over the last week or so warning about the US dollar and how it could dramatically weaken. And he makes, I think, just a really great and original, I've not really seen his point before, but a great point about how in danger the US dollar is in right now. His article, or the quip for that article, is pundits have been saying last rights for the dollar's global dominance since the 1960s. That is, for more than half a century now. But the pundits may finally be right because the greenback's dominance has been sustained by geopolitical alliances that are now fraying badly. So he goes through in that article some of the ups and downs the dollar has had, some of the different occasions that people have said, well, the dollar is on the brink of being destroyed. But people have kept holding dollars. Foreign countries keep buying dollars, keep buying American debt. They keep using that as part of their savings. And why is that, he asks? Well, part of that is a lack of alternative, and the US hasn't gone bankrupt since what he calls the disastrous war of 1812. I kind of enjoyed that that phrasing. But then he makes the case that there's more to it than that, and that U.S. allies hold American dollars, and that's part of their alliance with the U.S. I'll read from him to explain what he's talking about. He writes, in addition, U.S. diplomatic and military links encourage America's allies to hold dollars. States with their own nuclear weapons hold fewer dollars than countries that depend on the U.S. for their security needs. Being in a military alliance with a reserve currency issuing country boosts the share of the partner's foreign exchange reserves held in that country by roughly 30 percentage points. The evidence thus suggests that the share of reserves held in dollars would fall appreciably in the absence of this effect. So he's saying American allies are much quicker or much more ready to buy dollars to buy American debt. He continues, the underappreciated link between geopolitical alliances and international currency choice reflect a combination of factors. Governments have reason to be confident that the reserve currency country will make servicing debt held by allies a high priority. In return, those allies, by holding its liabilities, can help to lower the issuer's borrowing costs. So, say Japan, they get, or Europe, that benefit from America, from an alliance with America. Well, in some ways, they benefit from a cheaper America interest rate. They know if they lend America money, America's going to use some of that to station American troops in Europe to help with their defense, etc. So they're more willing to do that. They also believe, okay, well, we're America's ally, so they're going to prioritize paying us back as opposed to some nations that are America's enemies. So they're more likely to lend to the United States. They might look at Europe, might look at some other countries, and they think, well, we're not necessarily on good terms with them. If they get into trouble, they may not pay us back. We're on good terms with the U.S., we'll lend to the U.S. Going back to this article, it continues, here then, and not in another imbroglio over federal debt ceiling this coming December, is where the real threat to the dollar's international dominance lies. As one anonymous U.S. State Department official put it, President Donald Trump does not seem to care about alliances and therefore does not care about diplomacy. It goes on, South Korea and Japan are thought to hold about 80% of their international reserves in dollars. One can imagine that the financial behavior of these and other countries would change dramatically, with adverse implications for the dollar's exchange rate and U.S. borrowing costs, where America's close military alliances with its allies to fray. And that's a great point. He goes on to talk about how the situation in Korea and in Asia points to a rising China. I don't necessarily agree with the minutiae of his analysis that he had in that part of the article, but the overall point is absolutely true that China is rising in that part of the world and definitely to the expense of the United States, and that North Korea plays a major role in that. I think it's very obvious that China's stock is rising. The geopolitical futures has been writing over the last month or two about how the rise of or how the North Korea situation and how the fact that North Korea seems close to getting a nuclear weapon if they don't have one already, and America doesn't want to confront them, could even lead to America pulling out of South Korea, and that's the ultimate destination that this is heading. And so you can see, well, as that alliance phrase, and that could well happen in the wake of the rise of North Korea, well, these nations aren't going to be lending money to the United States as freely anymore. They may even be selling off some of their U.S. debt. This article concludes, where China leads geopolitically, its currency, the renminbi, is likely to follow. So as China rises, more nations could start holding Chinese debt instead of American debt. And Jeremiah Jacques has done just a great job. He's got a video that you can find on YouTube. Maybe I'll try and put a link to it in the comments for this radio program, in an article talking about how China's made some really dramatic moves over the last couple of months to have a Chinese reserve currency backed by gold alternative to the US dollar for oil trading. So they're really going after America's position. And as America pulls away from its allies, as those allies are forced to look to China, well, it's almost certain that that's going to happen economically as well. So it's a great point, and we could be seeing the demise of both the pound and, well, we will be seeing the demise of both the pound and the US dollar very shortly. We'll take a quick break, and then when we get back, we'll talk about just the prophecy behind all of this and why we're watching for these economic events.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Are we living in the last days? Some dismiss the notion as fanatical, but world leaders and news analysts are issuing warnings that are becoming more and more dire. Could Bible prophecies about the last days actually be accurate? Our brochure can help guide you through the relevant news and history and help you compare these events to what the Bible says. Are we living in the last days? This brochure is available for free right now at thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily Radio Show airs every morning at 7 a.m. Central Time on KPCG 101.3 FM in Edmond, Oklahoma.
Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show here on 101.3 on the FM dial and at kpcg.fm. This is Richard Palmer standing in for your regular host, Mr. Stephen Flurry, who, as I mentioned at the beginning, should be back here at Edstone very soon now, if he's not arrived even during this show. And we've been talking about some major threats to the British pound and to the American dollar, how they're being forced, could be forced down in value, how you could see a collapse in both of these currencies very soon. Now, this is a trend the Trumpet has been watching for a long time. It's a serious problem. In 2008, Key of David, Mr. Gerald Flurry gave a quick kind of overview of some of what we've been saying going back decades about this situation. So we'll play a quick clip from that right now.
Well, I think you can see we're talking about a problem that is not a small problem. This is something where, frankly, we need God's help, because man can't solve these mountain-sized problems. He simply cannot do it. One paper called it a financial Armageddon. So, where is all this leading? Where is all of it leading? America is giving foreigners control over our economy. And you've heard the old adage, he who has the gold rules. Now, you might rather listen to Almighty God, the master economist, who says the borrower is the servant of the lender. He's a servant. So we're becoming servants of China and Japan and all these other foreign countries that are giving us this money. Would you say America is being blessed, even though we've been the most blessed nation on this earth? Are we being blessed now, or is something else happening here?
So that was back in 2008, and Mr. Armstrong was talking about this for decades. Mr. Tim Thompson had a series of articles back in the 90s, quite a few articles, warning about what the Bible said was coming for America's economy. Mr. Robert Morley has had quite a few articles over the last decade or two, writing about what's going to happen to the U.S. economy. And this is something that Mr. Flurry has talked about often on the Key of David and in articles as well. Well, how bad is it for the United States? Well, in 2015, Mr. Flurry gave a dramatic overview of the state of the U.S. economy, of where things were heading back then. And it's a fairly lengthy clip. We'll play about 5 minutes of it. But it just does an excellent job of showing how close America came to disaster back in 2008. So we'll just play that clip quickly for you now.
And I want to read to you a scary report that you may not be familiar with. It should be scary to all of us in America, because listen to what Nancy Pelosi wrote in USA Today, September 17, 2013. She said, 5 years ago today, when I was the speaker, I gathered the other Democratic House leaders in my office to discuss the latest financial news. I told them that, as a matter of course, Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson briefed me on the state of the markets and the financial system, but had not done so that week. In that time, Lehman Brothers had filed for bankruptcy, Merrill Lynch had faced failure and had been purchased by Bank of America, and 2 days earlier, AIG had survived only after a Federal Reserve bailout. After the meeting at 3 p.m., I placed a call to Secretary Paulson and asked him to come the next morning to brief the leadership. Then came his stunning response. Madam Speaker, tomorrow morning will be too late. Tomorrow morning will just be too late. And she continues to write, we then planned to meet at 5 p.m. that day, and I invited Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke to join us. Later that evening, the meeting commenced with Democratic and Republican leaders from both the House and the Senate. Secretary Paulson described a meltdown and financial crisis from the depths of hell. Her words. When I asked Bernanke what he thought of the Secretary's characterization, he said, quote, if we do not act immediately, we will not have an economy by Monday. This was Thursday night. Everyone in the room was flabbergasted. And in other reports, it said they all had white faces. They were so scared. Well, now, what kind of a blow did that strike against the American economy? Here is what the Der Spiegel wrote. This is Germany's major magazine. Quote, it really does look as if the foundations of U.S. capitalism have shattered, observed German daily Der Spiegel. They've been shattered, like implying that, well, the foundation has been virtually destroyed. And it will never be able to come back the way they're implying there. And really, our economy hasn't ever really come back from that terrible meltdown. What have we done to try to correct that problem? Well, Chancellor Angela Merkel and President Nicolas Sarkozy, at that time President of France, said it is America's fault. And America caused Europe all kinds of problems and breakdowns because of our outrageous debt. It's all because of debt. That's what caused the problem. Have we solved the debt problem? Have we solved that problem? The U.S. Treasury Department website has this. When the present administration came to power in January 20, 2009, federal debt outstanding was $10.6 trillion. Now, this is on the Treasury website, U.S. Treasury. It currently stands, the debt stands at $18.1 trillion, from $10.6 trillion to $18.1 trillion during the present administration's running of the government. President Obama has added $7.5 trillion under his term. It will probably be close to $19 trillion when he leaves office. Then it says that added at least $8 trillion. That is more than all the debt that was accumulated by all the presidents from our founding to October 19, 2005, which was a year into President Bush's second term. It just keeps on soaring. The debt just keeps on soaring, as if we are out of touch with reality. I can't imagine why that wouldn't scare a lot of people. Notice what we wrote in thetrumpet.com July the 6th. I'll just quote this article. Yet now, the Bank of International Settlement, that is BIS, one of the world's leading financial authorities, is warning that when the next crisis strikes, central banks won't be able to save the day again, whether here in America or in Europe. They won't be able to save the day. Why? The life preservers have all been used. The Telegraph called the BIS report a scathing critique of global monetary policy. According to the BIS, in some jurisdictions, monetary policy is already testing its outer limits to the point of stretching the boundaries of the unthinkable. You want to ponder that? We're stretching the boundaries of the unthinkable. Is it possible that this could wreck the entire economy? That's what they mean. They're stretching the unthinkable. They shouldn't even be there, but we're there in America and in much of Europe. The policy mix has relied on the very debt-fueled growth model that lay at the root of the crisis, wrote the authors. And who has the worst debt of all in the world? Why, the United States, by far. Many experts said that the financial crisis in America was within hours of wrecking the economy. Now, I'm sure there'll be people that disagree with that, but nevertheless, you have to admit that it was a scary, frightening specter that we saw at that time. What was going on? How serious is it? Well, maybe we ought to take a look at what's happening in Greece today and take another look at this.
Now, all this is exactly as the Bible has prophesied, which is why we've been talking about this for so long. Now, God has financial laws that brings blessings and cursings, and America has been disobeying these laws. There are just natural consequences from going into debt in the way Britain and America have been doing on just a massive scale. But then even beyond that, in the Bible, God says, well, he will bless and curse our nations if we obey him and if we disobey him. We can look at some of those quickly now. I'll just turn over to Leviticus chapter 26, where God lists some of these blessings and cursings. Leviticus chapter 26, and in verse 9, God says that if we obey him, if Britain and America, these descendants of ancient Israel, obey him, then he says in verse 9, "For I will have respect unto you, and make you fruitful, and multiply you, and establish my covenant with you. And you shall eat the old store, and bring forth the old because of the new." So you'll have so much abundance that, you know, you'll have to bring some of your old stores out to make room for the new stores. You just won't have enough room to store all of your prosperity. Deuteronomy chapter 28 has a lot to say about exactly the same subject. Deuteronomy chapter 28 and verse 5. I was getting a little ahead of myself. It says, "Blessed shall you be in your basket and in your store. Blessed shall you be when you come in, and blessed shall you be when you go out." So your storage, your savings and investment will be blessed. Your labor, your work will be blessed. We see that in verse 8 as well. "The Eternal shall command blessings to you in your storehouse. In all that you set your hand unto, he will bless you in the land which the Eternal your God gives you." So it's just a blessing in all of those different ways. And verse 12, we see things like weather blessings. And then at the end of verse 12, it says, "And you shall lend unto many nations, and you shall not borrow." That's what God prophesies as a blessing. And that's the way that it was for the United States for a time. Now, America was, prior to World War II, it was the arsenal of democracy, lending money unto many nations. Now, though, it's not that way at all. It's the other way around. And these were exactly the type of cursings that are prophesied in these same chapters. Verse 16 of Deuteronomy chapter 28 says, "Curse shall you be in your city, curse shall you be in the field, curse shall be your basket and your store." This is if you disobey God. So your savings are cursed, your labors are cursed. "Your curse shall be the fruit of your body, the fruit of the land, the increase of your kine, of your cattle, and the flocks of your sheep. Curse shall you be when you come in, and curse shall you be when you go out." So the store and America's labor, Britain's labor, is now cursed. So the Bible prophesies economic prosperity for obedience and economic cursings for disobedience. Now, these blessings for obedience, you can read a lot more about those in our free book, The United States and Britain in Prophecy. It's not that Britain and America earlier just really earned these blessings. Instead, God did promise them unconditionally to Britain and America, but at a certain time, and we've received those blessings, we didn't obey God, and now the cursings are coming along. And just go on our website, you can click on the library tab and request The United States and Britain in Prophecy. We're always very keen to send that book out. We'll ship it free to you anywhere in the world. You can read it online as well, download it on your smartphone. And so this is a major reason why we've been watching this prophecy. But there are more prophecies that tie into this forecast of a financial crisis. This financial crisis will play a major role in the rise of this power in Europe. And that's something that Mr. Flurry explained in great detail in that Key of David program that I played a clip for you from earlier. That was called The American Europe Financial Collapse. And I'll play another somewhat lengthier, I think, again, about 5-minute clip from that program that talks about some of what Mr. Armstrong prophesied and some of what we're watching in terms of America's financial troubles leading to the rise of this European power.
Greetings, everyone. There is truly one of the greatest prophecies in all the Bible being fulfilled before your eyes. For decades, people in Europe have tried to unite the European power politically, and they have not been able to do so. And yet, if you look at Revelation 17, it says there are going to be 10 kings there that are going to be a real superpower, and it's going to become what is called the Holy Roman Empire. And it's also going to be led by a strong man, a strong leader that's going to, well, help sort of hijack that European Union, which is a real power in the world today. We have a new book coming out, and it we want to offer it to you now, and that is it's titled The Holy Roman Empire in Prophecy. And it is a book that will shock you and inspire you at the same time, and it's just a real key to understanding Bible prophecy. And I just hope that all of you will request it. But just how is how are the 10 nations going to unite in Europe politically? Well, the United States is going to play a key role in that in a negative way and help them to unite in a way that was actually predicted by Herbert Armstrong many years ago. It is going to become a strong political and military power. And I want to talk to you today about the American-Europe financial crisis. The two units are tied together. The two entities are tied together. Here's something that Herbert Armstrong wrote in 1984. He wrote about the massive banking crisis in America. Quote, it could suddenly result in triggering European nations to unite as a new world power larger than either the Soviet Union or the U.S. Now, that is a lot of power. And he explained how the European banks and all of these American banks are tied very closely together. It ties together one financial structure, one financial unit, you could say, and in a way includes much of the global world because it's such a powerful force. But Mr. Armstrong predicted years ago that financial crisis would cause these 10 nations to be united that people had tried so hard to unite up to that point and could not. And even to this point, they haven't been able to do it the way they want to. But it's really beginning to move fast in that direction, and it's going to shock this world when that great superpower bursts on the scene. You're going to see that happen in your lifetime, and I mean very, very soon. There's already a financial crisis in action in America and in Europe, and they're closely tied together, which is what maybe a lot of people do not understand. The European Union now has 28 nations, or is comprised of 28 nations, and the whole purpose of that union from the beginning to now was to, well, we've got to have this European Union so that we can control a dangerous Germany who started two world wars. Now, that was the purpose of it. But the whole thing has been reversed, and Germany has gotten control financially and is ruling Europe with a strong arm right now financially. We need to think about that because Germany has risen to power again in spite of the plans of men immediately after World War II. America is going to be the real catalyst, though, to unite this 10-nation unit in Europe, or the 10 kings talked about in Revelation 17.
So this is a very important trend for a number of reasons. And as you heard there, this economic collapse, it was prophesied to help bring Europe together, that alliance together. And we saw this already in the 2008 financial crisis. where you had an economic crisis that began in America that spread to Europe, and then it led to making several changes that forced the Eurozone much closer together, making several important steps to becoming a superstate. You saw basically Germany come in and really dominate Greece, a position that they still hold today, a dramatic increase in Germany's power in the Eurozone and in Europe. And that's something that we can expect to keep coming, to keep on coming. And, you know, as we talked about in the first part of the show, really the only thing that's been stopping this coming sooner, that's been keeping America alive, that's been propping them up, has been foreign nations not selling the dollar. But as these America's alliances fray, that is going to change. People could start soon selling that dollar. As Mr. Flurry brought out, you know, the US is just full of debt and totally dependent on other nations for servicing that debt. The UK is in exactly the same boat. We're dependent upon the kindness of strangers, as the head of the Bank of England put it. And the Bible talks about this as well. It talks about a major economic component to the way that these foreign nations respond to the US and as they go through their economic crisis, an economic crisis brought on by the US, how that will really cause them to turn against the US. Deuteronomy 28 and verse 55, where we are at the moment, even talks about a siege, for example. America being besieged by a foreign power, starting with, you know, an economic siege, America's economy being cut off. In Habakkuk 2 and verse 6 to 8, God even talks about America as the modern descendants of Israel, Britain and America, as a debtor nation being persecuted by their creditors. It writes, this is in the New American Standard Bible version, it says, "Will not all those take up a taunt song against him, even mockery and insinuations against him, and say, 'Woe to him who increases what is not his, for how long, and makes himself rich with loans? Will not your creditors rise up suddenly, and those who collect from you awaken? Indeed, you will become plunder for them. Because you have looted many nations, all the remainder of the people will loot you.'" So America's borrowed from so many nations, and as that collapses, that's going to put them in a very difficult position. So the Bible prophesies that Britain and America are heading for a major financial collapse, and you can see all the indications of this collapse all around you. And that's going to lead to a lot of hardship. But in the end, it's going to lead to Britain and America obeying God and obeying those financial laws. You can read about that. It's going to lead, ultimately, that obedience to just a huge amount of prosperity. And Britain and America will once again be blessed by God. And there's so many scriptures in the Bible that talk about that. I'll just read one now as we wrap up this program. In Amos chapter 9, he writes, "Behold, the day comes, says the Eternal, that the plowman shall overtake the reaper, and the treader of grape him that sows seeds, and the mountain shall drop with sweet wine, and the hills shall melt." So a time where there's just so much prosperity, so much agricultural prosperity leading just to economic prosperity. That is what is the end result of all of this for the United States and for Britain, at least for the peoples of those nations. And you can learn more about God's financial laws so that you can put them into practice right now in your life and receive blessings from God in our free booklet, Solve Your Money Problems. Then our free booklet, He Was Right, talks about all of what is prophesied now for the financial collapse of Britain and America. And our free booklet, The Wonderful World Tomorrow, talks in more detail about this economic prosperity that is coming. You can get all of those on our website at the Literature Request tab. As I said, we're more than happy to send those out to you for free wherever you are in the world. And I'd like to conclude today with something just a little bit different. It's a six-minute video we have up on our website right now. It's from Trumpet Managing Editor Joel Hillico, and it's called What is Bible Prophecy? It's a great explainer video of just the way the Trumpet watches world news, so keep listening and tuning in for that. Keep sending in your emails as well. Tune in tomorrow here on kpcg.fm and on 101.3 on the FM dial, and hopefully you'll have Mr. Stephen Flurry back with you then. And I'll leave you with the audio from this video, What is Bible Prophecy?
A lot of people say they believe what the Bible says. Maybe you're one of them. It's the most read book in the world. It has a lot of wise sayings, psalms, stories, history. It also contains a lot of prophecy. I'm Joel Hilliker, managing editor of the Philadelphia Trumpet News Magazine. Prophecy. You might associate that word with apocalyptic movies, mystical books, crazy street preachers. A lot of people do and dismiss it. But one-third of the Bible is prophecy. Just look at the table of contents. Out of the 66 books in the Bible, 18 are named after prophets. And other books have many prophecies in the Old Testament and New Testament. Genesis prophesied that the descendants of Israel would inherit the Promised Land. 1 Samuel prophesied the coming of Jesus Christ and the return of Jesus Christ. Then there's the book of Revelation, which is basically entirely prophecy. A lot of intelligent people believe in God. Many even read the Bible very seriously. But when this book claims to foretell the future, a lot of people reject it, or they skip to the parts about the love of Jesus. But you know, Jesus himself was a prophet. He foretold future events, some of which he called end time events. So if you believe the Bible, you can't ignore the question of Bible prophecy. Have you ever looked into it? What is prophecy? It's the forecasting of future events. Let me give you an example. The book of Genesis records that God called a man named Abram. He made a promise, an amazing promise to this man. He actually changed his name to Abraham, which means father of a great multitude. And he said, I will make nations of you, and kings shall come out of you. That promise was a prophecy. Now, the Bible itself records that Abraham lived out his life and never saw that promise fulfilled, and it wasn't fulfilled in his son's lifetime or even his grandson's lifetime. But did the prophecy fail? Well, actually, if you study biblical and secular history, you see that Abraham's descendants did grow to become nations, and they did include many kings. It took quite a few generations, but God did keep his promise. Believe it or not, there are actually nations in the world today that are descended from Abraham, just like God said. Now, a lot of people are confused about prophecy, and that's understandable. Many phrases the Bible uses are no longer common. Many prophecies use symbols, or they use ancient names for predecessors of modern nations. So people throw up their hands and say, Bible prophecy just can't be understood. But if you think about it, that's basically saying you can't trust God to keep his promises. You know, there are many prophecies in the Bible that have already come to pass. Promises God has made that he fulfilled in detail hundreds or even thousands of years later. And there are many more that are in the process of being fulfilled right now. Think about this. Why would God record so many prophecies and then preserve them for thousands of years and make sure we have access to them today? Why would he do that if he didn't intend for us to understand them? This might seem strange, but there are actually passages where God explains that he purposefully obscured the meaning of a prophecy at the time he gave it because he only intended it to be understood later. For example, the prophet Daniel said, I heard, but I understood not. And God replied, Go your way, Daniel, for the words are closed and sealed till the time of the end. That means there would come a time when God would open those words and unseal their meaning. Bible prophecy is an important subject. It's not intellectually honest to say you believe the Bible, but then ignore Bible prophecies as if it doesn't matter whether or not God keeps his word. If God's prophecies aren't true, then how much credibility or authority does the Bible really have in our lives? But if, on the other hand, Bible prophecy is true, time after time, without a miss, if God can say something and then thousands of years later carry it out, then we have to admit that the Bible is authoritative. It can be trusted, including those prophecies that have yet to be fulfilled. You can understand prophecy. It will help you make sense of what's happening in the world today. It will give you real hope to see where events are leading in fulfillment of the promises and according to the plan of the all-powerful God who forecasted future events and is bringing them to pass. I'm Joel Hilliker. Thanks for watching. Here's a fact. The Bible is a book focused on Abraham's descendants, the people of Israel, including most of its prophecies. To understand Bible prophecy, you have to know who Israel is. You can find the answer in Herbert W. Armstrong's awesome book, The United States and Britain in Prophecy. Click here to read it, or just ask us, and we'll send you a copy of this book absolutely free.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is The Trumpet Daily.